Hello and welcome to the Empowered Hormone Podcast, where we pull apart all those taboo topics, periods, parasites, poos, hormones and more. Let's question everything you've been taught about your body. I'm your host, Sheridan Decker, a gin-loving gut health nerd, passionate about debunking myths on birth control, period pain and IBS. If you struggle with bloating or your period is less than pretty, then join me as we chat about everything relating to gut and hormone health. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Hormones Podcast. Thank you so much for jumping on today, because today I have the privilege of speaking to Nick. So Nick is the founder of Organic Performance, which actually has turned into my favorite all-time favorite protein brand. And it's interesting because I came across Organic Performance through a friend of a friend. So those who have listened to the podcast or follow me on Instagram will know a bit about Nina. And she's, she's an athlete, but she's a plant-based athlete, which is something that was actually new to me at the time. I saw everyone had to eat meat to be a decent athlete. And she's incredible. She's making great gains. She's really fit. Go stalk her. I'll chuck her in the show notes, actually. She'll love that. Anyway, so she shared a vegan protein brand, which was Organic Performance. I had a look at it because I have so many clients who can't handle dairy and I wanted to give them some kind of protein. So I came across Organic Performance, and then through that, I met Nick, and you've kind of converted me to a plant-based protein brand person, which I would never have thought I would be. So thank you for that, and thank you for jumping on the podcast today.
No, thank you for having me. First podcast, so I hope I don't ruin it for you.
Hey, there's only I think maybe one other male on here, so the standard that we are holding
you. Oh, good, the bar's low.
50-50. So for those of you who haven't heard about Organic Performance and haven't actually heard about Nick before, can you just tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and, yeah, your sort of passions and how and why you started Organic Performance?
Yeah, it has been a bit of a journey. I'm actually a civil engineer by trade. I have been for nearly 10 years now, but, you know, I'm 33, so 20 years in training and fitness. My old man was a world champion kickboxing coach, so there's quite a big history. Yeah, he was. So there's quite a big history there.
Wow.
Going back to 2006 when I was in high school, me and a friend actually started a supplement company back then. We didn't even have a driver's license, so it was pretty hard, and there was no social media, so it was pretty hard to get that off the ground. And it was purely just BCAAs, creatine and glutamine, which, you know, are pretty abundant products now. They saturate the market, but back then, they weren't even available. So we were kind of ahead of the times then. Fast forward, you know, stayed actively in that health and fitness industry, and started moving my training journey into sort of endurance pre-COVID, because, you know, once COVID kicked in, you couldn't go to gyms, your training had to change. I just started running and riding and fell in love with it. And that took me into starting to push myself into some endurance sports. So, you know, big bike events, Ironman, full distance Ironman, half Ironman, that sort of stuff. And when I first started doing that, I noticed that the nutrition in these sports was just so far behind where it should be. I've come from, you know, sort of a bodybuilding background, a boxing background, background where nutrition is so dialed in. Like, every bit of performance in bodybuilding is about having the perfect diet. It's not even about how hard you can train. It's about how clean can you eat. You know, how can you get your macros right? And then moving into Ironman, it's like, how much sugar can you eat?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm thinking, I'm here, my job here is to swim 3.8 kilometers, ride 180 kilometers, and then run a marathon, and all you want to give me is sugar and artificial electrolytes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, there's a hole here.
There's
a dramatic gap in the market here. Like, this does not make sense. What you got to do is something about this. So I naturally just started moving away from that and sort of mixing stuff for myself, because I'm like, well, there's nothing out there. They're still giving me Gatorade. Like, if you've done these events, you go through the aid station, it's Gatorade. That's a 40-year-old recipe. That goes back to the late 70s in the NFL. That's how old that is. That is artificial sodium, potassium, and they're super low dose and just plain sugar. That's all that is, with some artificial flavoring. And that's still what they're giving out. This is the most challenging sport in the world. Why is the nutrition not keeping up with it? Like, look, everyone, you know, there's a line at the bathrooms in the transitions because your stomach's so trashed. So naturally I deviated towards, okay, well, there's a hole here. There's a gap. What can we do? And that's where I guess where organic performance was sort of born. It was something I'd worked on for a while. It took a long time to try to find recipes around vegan proteins that would actually taste good, which probably why you didn't use them for so long.
The stuff in the market's crap. I mean, and there's good quality brands out there, but they just weren't producing nice tasting, the creaminess as opposed to the graininess, the texture, the flavors. And then also people either use like too much stevia or monk fruit or something that it's so sweet that you're like, oh, this is gross. Like, I actually can't handle a lot of this. And then, or it's just bland. And you're like, oh, this is, there's a very, very rarely something in the middle ground where we went, oh, yeah, this is yum. Like, this is good.
It is a real, like, it took me ages to find something that worked. And the difference was, in the end, the Australian grown plant protein. And that's what people don't use. You'll see it on the labels. Most products, they'll just have blended and packed in Australia, but won't actually have a percentage of ingredients. And that's where you'll find, I don't know if it's our soil or something, but definitely the fava bean, like that, when that is cultivated and stuff and breaks back down, it really it fertilizes the soil. It's really good for the environment. Nice. It actually uses something like 3% of the water whey protein to do. So it's like super sustainable as well.
So what made you go for a plant-based one as opposed to whey or casein or anything like that? Are you vegan or vegetarian?
No, not at all. But I eat a lot of meat and I eat a lot of dairy. So if I can use an opportunity to have less, you know, to put something else in my diet and get that diversity, why not do it? Like it's a free ticket. Like at the end of the day, it's just a still a chocolate milk. It's either got the dairy-based one or it's a plant-based one.
Yeah, if I'm already... Yeah, this is the thing, right? What I loved about it is that it then becomes more versatile because obviously we know there's more people with food intolerances and all that kind of stuff as well. And then in my area field, everyone's got SIBO, so bacterial overgrowth, parasites or gut stuff. So they've compromised their gut lining. So breaking down lactose has become a real issue. Not saying, you know, it's not fixable because it is, and not saying you can't tolerate the whey or the casein at some point. But when people are in that compromised position, they actually need to be on a plant-based something. And then you're right, when there's that gap in the market, it's like, well, how the heck do you get enough protein in your diet if you're struggling to break down all these foods? So, yeah, that's awesome.
And you don't want to just get a protein that's they've just put heaps of lactase in there as a digestive enzyme. Like, I'd rather just have something that works with my body, the way my body is. And that's, you know, where I guess I've moved into plant protein and could very quickly fell in love with it, actually.
So and, yeah, that was when did you start Organic Performance? How many years ago? Like, how long did it take to get the first from going, this is what I want to do, to actually, because you're not a food scientist.
No.
And I think like so many of these products, like there's time, there's effort, there's tasting, there's sourcing the ingredients, there's all that stuff. Like this is a big undertaking from someone who's obviously clearly intelligent. Like that's a no-brainer, and you're in the industry, but it's another whole thing again.
It is, and it took probably about 2 years. We launched in 22. I actually launched the business while I was overseas doing an Ironman in Switzerland, and that was what sort of like the way I sort of marketed the launch of it was by finishing the Ironman and taking it live, but it didn't really get legs. It was just more for myself. But I'd been working on it, and I tried getting different. I'd originally just started with just fruit powder and plant protein, and it was a disaster. It was not nice. It had good protein content, but it was horrible and it didn't work. And honestly, the way I started was I found things that I sort of liked, and I looked at their ingredients as a starting point and said, well, what on this list do I not need? Let's extract the ones I don't need, which is an endless list of emulsifiers and thickeners and preservatives. So take them out, and then let's adjust the ratios of what's left and see if I can find something that is palatable and still healthy. And we got there. It took about 2 years, but we got there. The protein was obviously more challenging than some, and we focus on electrolytes. Well, I guess, yeah, it's a good segue that, one of the reasons I really went for a minimalist product line was there's so much, there's just so many products. Have you ever noticed that? Like if you go to a big website or you walk into a store and you're just overwhelmed and you look at it and you go, do I need one of all of these? Like, and the answer's wild.
No.
Like the research clearly shows there's about four things that will benefit you. That's it.
It's crazy. It's become a real marketing industry. Like the whole, because sports are so big in Australia, it's like, you're right. You need everything of everything.
And you don't. Like there's so many ingredients. Like, you know, the flavor of the month will come up and it'll flood your social media and you'll look at it. And I'll go, interesting. It shows that, you know, it makes you 10% fitter. Unreal. I'll look that up. I'll look up some research, some studies. I haven't heard about this. Look up some studies. Nothing. Not proven. Hasn't even proven to work in a rat. You know, like, and then they're selling it like it's some magical cure or fat loss drug.
So you started, because you're talking about these four things we need, but you started with the protein was the first thing. Because obviously, for those who don't know, you've obviously got a couple products now. So the protein was the baby that kicked it off, and then you went from there.
I had a couple of babies. So the protein was one. As I said, I was an endurance athlete, so carbohydrate naturally being another product, and something that we should probably, we'll probably go down a rabbit hole with, but, you know, carbohydrates, a clean source of carbohydrate was one of the first things I came up with, and that didn't need to be flavored. So that was easy. It was just, it's just an unflavored ingredient. And then the electrolytes were the other one that I was a big advocate for. And I knew that would be quite easy to get to taste nice, because you think of electrolytes, you sort of think fruity, zesty, you know, and it's not an overwhelming flavor. And you don't need, like protein, you need sort of 90% of the actual mix needs to be protein, you know, whereas the electrolytes, I'm thinking, why are we using artificial sweeteners for electrolytes when I can just actually use a powdered fruit and a powdered coconut water base? And then I have like the perfect hydration formula. Put in a few naturally occurring sodium and magnesium salts and you're up and running. That's how easy it was. Yeah. I'm thinking, why don't people do this?
Yeah, it's when you send that Gatorade thing, that just made me think, don't cricket and everything still use Gatorade? Like, aren't a lot of the sports in a lot of the advert? I mean, I know it's a lot of
still the major sponsor in the NFL. But,
it's wild. It's sure, like when there's so much good stuff on the market.
But there isn't. There isn't. There's so much like bad stuff. Like, you know, they will be like, oh, look, there's this much magnesium in this product. But you look at the actual compound, because as far as some people might post, magnesium comes in many shapes and forms, and very few of them are actually bioavailable and actually do anything. The biggest one is the B vitamins. Have you know about the B vitamins? How if they're not methylated B12, it clogs you up. Like it does nothing.
Yeah, people can't break it down and use it properly. Yeah, you're right. But it, like, what I'm thinking is there's the research around now. Like, why when we have, you know, basic humans like you and me who are not food scientists, we're just passionate people about what we do, right? Like, if we can be coming across this and learning this, like, why is this not transitioning to our big sporting industries? Which is, and then, you know, you've created something amazing with the carbohydrates and the proteins and things. And it's like, imagine if you could get that into your comps and be like, hey guys, like this is going to be way better for you. Like it would be game changing for so many people.
It would make a massive difference, but I can't afford to pay them $1 billion a year.
True. So with the carbohydrates, tell me a little bit about that. Why did you create a clean carb? And, you know, because obviously you're using it in performance while you're running, while you're training, doing all that stuff. Because a lot of people ask me about gels and things. So a lot of my clients who are doing triathlons or marathons or whatever, and they're like, what should I be using intra-training for carbs? This is obviously prior to come across these guys. I'm kind of going, oh, man, I don't know, because so many of the gels I look at, I'm like, they're full of crap. I don't really want you taking that, especially when you've got gut issues. So there definitely has been a hole in the market with the carbs.
Carbs, yeah, you're spot on. And the gels, I started with gels too and very quickly said, nah, I'm not doing this. Like you can taste them, you know, like you can taste the sickliness of them, and that's just the artificial sweetness. But like, what do you do? Like you've got a product that needs to sit, and it is a water-based product generally. If that's going to sit in your pantry for a number of years, the only way to do that is to preserve the crap out of it with artificial preservatives and make it as artificial as you can so it doesn't grow bacteria and become, you know, a safety hazard. So that's why they're just, they really ruin your stomach when you, when you haven't eaten in 4 hours and you're out on the bike and you're racing and you put that in there, it's a recipe for disaster. You're going straight to the toilet.
Yeah.
So that's sort of, that's exactly where it, for me, it came from. And I guess carbs is, you really need to, you really need to sort of understand the sort of basics about simple and complex carbohydrates so you can sort of, there's part of what I do at Organics Performance is try and educate people, not just sell them a product, but teach them, you know, here's the knowledge you need to make an informed decision and build your own nutrition strategy. And when it comes to carbohydrates, you've got to understand glucose, fructose, and sucrose as a real three basic fundamentals. And you can take sucrose out of that, your table sugar, because that's glucose and that's fructose, one part of each. By the time that hits your bloodstream, it's split into the two, and then you may as well call them glucose and fructose. Simple. So you're left with two. Simple as that. But the body handles them both very differently. So the body stores glucose as muscle glycogen, and it stores fructose as liver glycogen. So if you think about your body, your muscle mass compared to your liver, there's a big difference. So your muscles can store up to 500 grams of glucose, 2,000 calories, whereas your liver can store 50 grams of fructose or 200 calories. Not much.
Yeah.
So when it comes to a fueling strategy, and we'll talk about more about this later, you need to be focusing on those glucose-based carbs. And this is why that, like, something like a carb-loading strategy where you just smash fruit is not really going to work, because fruit is basically, you think fruit, you think fructose, it's more sucrose, but like I said, you end up with a lot more fructose than glucose. Yeah. So you're better off with these glucose-heavy carbs, which are your rices, your oats, anything wheat-based if you can handle the gluten, that sort of stuff. And then you need to look at how digestible is a glucose and a fructose molecule or element when you're racing. So glucose typically can handle up to 60 grams an hour. That's what the current research is saying. But I would argue that it's far higher than that, mainly because I test that on myself quite a lot. And fructose, you can handle up to 30, and some people can't handle that. You'll find a lot of people really react poorly to fructose.
Yeah.
So typically I encourage people to stay away from heavy fructose things and try focus on the glucose, because your body just handles it far, far better.
Yeah.
So that's
what the gels and stuff are having in them, is a high amount of glucose, which is obviously what people are utilizing and using, which then swings back to where is that glucose coming from? So what's the form of glucose they're getting?
Yeah, correct. So that's a good point. The source of the glucose, and like a lot of these gels will still run fructose because you can still use it. It's just not as usable. But the source of the glucose, you know, what you'll see commonly in the gels, you'll see the pure glucose, that's fine. You'll see dextrose, which is ultimately just glucose. There's no difference. It's the same molecule.
Yeah.
Or you'll see things like maltodextrin, which is what's called a polysaccharide. So it's a long, long chain of glucose. So the benefit of a maltodextrin versus a glucose is that it takes a lot longer for your body to break it down. You'll consume it, it's less sweet, and your body will start peeling off glucose element out of one by one and using it as needed. Well, the only problem with maltodextrin is it's commonly made from GMO, mass-produced corn or wheat. So yeah, I think I've heard you speak about this, a lot of maltodextrin.
I realised that the other day. I saw it in something, because that was what I had originally before you sent me your carbs, I think it was maltodextrin or something, and I never really thought about it. And then I saw a product the other day, and it said can be derived from wheat or corn. And I went, wait a second, if I have clients who are taking this, I'm like, and it's derived from wheat, I'm like, that is 100% going to upset their stomach.
Yep. And it's usually GMO, but 99% of the time it's GMO, and it goes through quite an enzymatic process to get it to maltodextrin too. So whatever chemicals they're using to extract it and to break it down is usually, you know, probably what upsets the stomach more so.
Yeah.
So it was trying to find something that was glucose heavy, but not maltodextrin and not just pure glucose. That was And that was a challenge. Like, I started with things like sweet potato flours, like, shit, you're not. And it was like really gluggy and thick. And I'm like, this is just not marketable. Like, yeah, sure, I'm a freak, I'll eat it. But there's no way I could ever sell this to someone.
Yeah.
So I spent quite a while trying to find. And what I ended up coming across was, have you ever seen, you know, the sugar alternatives they offer? Syrups, rice syrup,
yes,
things like that.
Yeah.
So you can get that powdered. And now what rice syrup is, it's just basically boiled down rice into a syrup. They spray dry it into a powder, and it ends up with what is very similar to a maltodextrin at a molecular level, but it's not maltodextrin. It's a syrup solid. And it meets in the middle where it's basically half dextrose and half polysaccharide. So you get some fast acting glucose and you get some that breaks down. You get like the perfect, you don't get a big spike in your GI, but you get more of a steady energy curve. So it was just, I just fell on it. I got lucky. No one else uses it.
Yeah, interesting. So use a syrup solid. I've seen the syrup form, like the rice syrup, but I didn't know, until I've seen yours, I didn't know it could come in the powder. And the tapioca was the same, because I've seen the tapioca syrup in like, I think in like coconut yogurts and stuff, you know, when they're trying to avoid, they're trying to add a sweetener and whatever. I've seen it in there. And then I think, is that in your carb blend or in something of yours as well?
Yep. I use rice syrup solid, tapioca syrup solid, and coconut water powder.
Yeah.
So I use the coconut water powder because it is more of a fructose based thing, but I only run it at about 10%. So it's sort of like 9 to 1. That makes sense. So it's quite low, but it does get a little bit in there. So I decided to.
In one scoop of the carb blend, how many carbs are you getting in there? Is it 30 grams? What's in the scoop? 10 grams?
I labeled it as 40, but as one of my best mates just pointed out, it weighs in about 35. So I messed that one up.
Yeah, but would you, so 35 grams of carbs. So what's your recommendation? I think it's on the packet actually as well. For light, moderate, high intensity training, what kind of carbs are you looking at, suggesting, or what would, obviously you're doing more high intent or like longer intensity stuff, so you're going to be consuming more, but what are you looking at?
As a rule of thumb, low 30, medium 60, high up to 90 as a rule of thumb.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is, you just go 1, 2, or 3 scoops per hour. And everyone's different and every training session is different. But if you're preparing for a race and you're trying to, you know, stay on top of your recovery and bounce back the next session, then going on the slightly higher side is going to benefit you for sure.
What about, because this is where people then ask me questions, they're like, so do I need it if I'm eating pre and post training? They're like, do I still need to be taking carbs intra-workout? And usually I'm like, yes, because your body's burning stuff, so you need it. But what's your thoughts around that? Like, tell me about when you're training, so say a morning or evening session, are you eating before and taking stuff during and obviously eating after? Or is it because you're time poor and you're getting up, you're training, and that's why, and you're not having anything before, and that's why you're taking your carbs?
It's a good question, and it's a one that's hard to answer without going down a rabbit hole. And it's why I try and educate as much as I can so people can make their own decisions, because you want to build the habit of learning to eat in the morning before you train, so that when you do come to race day, your stomach's conditioned to be able to digest quickly and to hit the ground running. So it's important to eat. On the other side, you also want to be having some of those shorter morning sessions that maybe only 45 minutes where you're not eating, because your body's so smart, it can condition itself to balance the ratio of fat and carbohydrate that it's using for energy. And as I said before, your body's going to store 2,000 calories from carbohydrate, but depending on your body, you could have 50,000 calories of stored fat. Like, and that's not much fat. But you've got an endless supply there. So being able to tap into that and be efficient is so important to be able to race efficiently, especially when the longer races where your ratio of fat's going to be a lot higher. So anything in the morning I'm doing over an hour and a half, I'll make sure I'll train that carb intake first thing. Yeah. But anything less than that, I'll try to do fasted so I can get that, my body can get used to trying to burn more fat while I'm working at a higher intensity.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So like for me in the morning, like I said, fast less than 45 minutes, but I'll eat food if it's anything sort of longer than that. And then to make sure that the next session, because it's not about just getting through that session, recovering, not being sore. I want to train just as well the next day. So making sure I'm topped up as I'm training and then once I'm done is really important. Say, for example, you do a 2 hour, like say you're trying to train for a marathon, you do a 2 hour run, you can burn 2000 calories in that. That's your glycogen gone, right?
Yeah.
So if you aren't taking anything during that run and you manage to get through it, you're not training the same the next day, I can promise you. You're going to struggle.
Yeah, that makes sense. And people forget that. You're right. They think about in that session as opposed to my next session, my next week and this and that. And especially where if you're training 2-3 times a day as well, or even every single day and you're doing hard sessions every single day, well, yeah, your body's got to repair, rebuild. And ideally, you are getting stronger. You're wanting to get stronger and fitter, like, right? You're trying to progress as well. Like, unless you're in a real intense deficit or trying to lose weight phase or something, where that's obviously quite different. But if we're talking about performance here, building muscle, getting stronger, getting fitter, well, you got to eat to grow in a sense. Well, I know we chatted about this before, but consuming enough calories is one of the biggest things that people tend not to do.
Yeah, it's very true. And if you like, I'll talk about a good friend of mine who he recently completed 50 kilometers a day running for 50 days. Like, just fathom that for a second. Like, that's, and he worked. So he did a 4.5 hour run. And I think he was running between 5 and 6 minute kilometers, which is still a decent pace. And he did that for 50 days straight. Now, you know, you can fathom doing a marathon, but then putting 8Ks on the back of that, you sort of go, oh, I don't really want to do that. But then getting up and doing that again 49 more times is, you know, quite remarkable. And the reason I love it is because from a nutrition standpoint, that's a real challenge. You're burning 3,000 to 4,000 more calories per day than you would have if you weren't doing that. That's a lot of food. Like, that's a lot of food. So across the 50 days, that was 150,000 calories. And I've got the numbers here because I just find it so fascinating, but it's 37,000 grams of carbohydrate.
Holy moly.
Or if you put it into fat, it's 17 kilos. Wow. So you're a nutritionist. You can't drop 17 kilos in 7 weeks and be healthy.
No.
Like, so you have to fuel. So we had him having about 400 grams of carbs during every run, and he was just, outside of that, he was just eating as much as he could. And we ended up, he only lost 3.5 kilos over 7 weeks, which is a really healthy weight loss.
Wow.
So there's it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But then you're right. That's where things like the carb blend and the protein blends as well and the electrolytes and everything come in. Because if you're not then supplementing and you were trying to do that from food alone, that it just wouldn't happen, obviously, because there's no way you can consume that much food. So it needs to be in some kind of easy digestible liquid form as well. But I think that's where the beauty of supplements do come in, obviously the convenience of them, the storage of them, that kind of stuff as well. But actually even just consuming that many carbs is simply impossible from a food standpoint alone.
Yep. Yeah, you can say that again. And that's why it just need to have a real mild and no flavor to it, because he's going to have to be, like, he was having to consume 60 to 90 grams per hour in a water bottle and do that for 4.5 hours. You know?
For those who don't know, chat about how you got around. So the gels, obviously, we're talking gels are in easy. They're consumable. They're little. They sit in my pockets. They do what they need to do. How did you work around that? Because you didn't produce a gel. You produced a powder, right? So you then obviously had to create a way for us to carry that around and go from there.
I did. And it wasn't that genius, but first thing that I found was, like, I could make a gel, but then all of a sudden I got to introduce preservatives and a way to make it the shelf life last. And I didn't really want to do that. Mm. So I thought, well, it's not that hard to really just mix powder with water. You know, so we've got these little I don't even know what to call them. They call them flasks. They're little flasks. You just get a funnel and you pour your powder in and mix it with water and you got yourself a gel, and it's fresh. I'm not sure. Have you tried to use gels when you're out on the mountain bike?
No, I haven't. No.
One hand trying to bite it and then squeeze it.
Yeah, I know. I see people try to do it and I'm like, that does not look fun or appealing, whatever. But with your little, I want to call it a pouch almost or whatever it is, like, it's so much more convenient as well. Like, it's easy and it's great and reusable and sustainable. Hello, environment, rather than just packets of crap everywhere.
Well, it's a really important thing for people trying to get into endurance sports is to understand that not every session you do is the same. You're not the same as the person next to you. And the conditions of every session are always going to change as well. And if you can start to understand what your body needs, you'll find that there's not just one supplement that's going to fix all your sessions. Like, it's so uncommon. But being able to just mix your own ratios, be in the bottle or be in the flask pouch, you can adjust your balance of electrolytes. You can adjust the amount of carbs you're going to be consuming. And that just to benefit exactly what you're doing on that day. So you might wake up one morning and find, oh, it's 40 degrees outside, but I'm only going to go for a half an hour session. You don't need carbohydrates to get through half an hour, but you need a lot of electrolytes and you need some fluids.
Yeah.
So adjust accordingly to your sessions. You might be doing a two hour run in 10 degree conditions. Yeah. You don't want to be taking 1,000 milligrams of sodium. You just want to go, but you need the carbs still.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because then if you touch briefly on fluid loss, you're talking about that fluid loss in itself. So if you are having a hot session, especially even summer to winter, right? Like I think about my rides now, but I'm barely riding because it's been raining so much. But I think about the fluid loss is so much less because I'm not sweating. It's cold out there, right? I mean, you are by the end. But in summer when it's 40 degrees first thing in the morning, you're sweating for the whole hour and a half. So if you're losing fluid, is that then impacting our performance?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. And be careful of saying you don't sweat in the cold. Like you said, I know you said you do, but you sweat a lot in the cold, and it's maybe we should do a reel on how to do a sweat test and a fluid loss test so people can understand that, because you sort of go, oh wow, I lost a liter in an hour in the cold. But
really,
yep, you'd be amazed. Well, we'll do something else on that.
Cool.
But yeah, I got some good numbers around fluid loss. So up to anywhere up to sort of 4% fluid loss as a percentage of your total body weight, you're going to start to find a real decline in your performance. So you could lose 20 up to 30% of performance just by losing that much. So if you're an 80 kilo person, you're talking 3.5 liters. If you're a 60 kilo person, you're down to 2.8, 3 liters, which is not crazy. And like, if you're just doing a run, you know, you're not going to get into that territory. But if you're running a marathon and you're doing it for 4 hours, or you're trying to do an Ironman and you're doing it for a half, you know, 5 hours to 10 hours, you're going to be in that realms for sure. And the second you start losing that much fluid, your brain's going to start to fail you. You're going to feel every bit of soreness. Your heart rate's going to go up because your blood's thickening.
Yeah.
Like, so you staying right on top of that hydration is so important. And the biggest mistake, and I don't know if you've noticed this, but how often do you read things and it's like, make sure your water intake's so high so you stay hydrated? Like, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. If you want to read about health, it's drink this much water. And all you're doing is flushing out your electrolytes, right? Like,
And
we're still giving that advice. Just drink water, but drink it with something that's going to retain the water in your body. So you could go for a big mistake people will do is they'll do a marathon and they will have water. But if there's no electrolytes to balance that water in your body, it's just going to pass straight through you.
Yeah.
And make you feel sick. And then you're actually getting less and less hydrated rapidly.
You're snack on, because it's one of the biggest things I find I'm re-educating these women on as well, regardless of training. Like, even if you're not performing, people are drinking water and they're going, oh yeah, that's what I have to do. I'm drinking 2 to 3 liters of water. I'm like, no, unless you're popping mineral drops in it or you're drinking some form of electrolytes, it's pointless. That's why I almost say you're better off drinking orange juice or milk or something that's got minerals in it, which is actually going to rehydrate you better than, like you said, pure water alone.
Well, it's actually going to make you worse. I mean, don't get me wrong, you should definitely drink water on its own throughout the day. Maybe we'll drop that. Definitely drink water, a lot of it, but don't make the mistake of not having any minerals with it. And like, if you don't have a salty meal, that's enough. You know, have some salt in your food, and then you can go away and you can drink a few liters for the rest of the day, and off you go. But when you're actually trying to race or train, having that balance is just so important, and you'll learn that about yourself really quickly when you start actually experimenting in your training.
I think I noticed that for a lot of clients and stuff, we do say once they add in the electrolytes or mineral drops or something like that, they do notice a big difference. But the other thing is, because this doesn't just correlate to just training, it's hormones, it's gut health, it's everything else. Like, the minerals that we call them are like the spark plugs to the body. So Every thyroid reaction, every metabolic reaction, every hormone reaction, everything needs adequate minerals. And everyone's coming in mineral depleted, and then you're going and sweating and you're like rehydrating with just water. It's like, mate, you're starting here and you're dropping, rather than going, hey, I've got enough minerals and I'm constantly topping them up. Like, the change in energy, fatigue and stuff just from introducing good quality electrolytes and minerals alone is actually mind-blowing. Like, I think it's one of the biggest changes I see in people is like, oh, I've added in an electrolyte and some mineral drops or good quality salt or something. And it's like, that alone changes it for people.
Like, if when you do start, like you said, making that transition and including some electrolytes in your water, you get to the end of the day and you're sort of like, oh, it's 6 p.m. I've worked today. I feel good still.
Yeah.
You know, I actually feel like, hey, it makes a massive difference. And I made that mistake for years. I was always just a heavy water drinker. But yeah, now I make an effort to at least once a day have a good serve, and it's completely changed it.
Yeah.
And combining that with carbohydrates, the two together, because carbohydrates, they hold water naturally. So when the more muscle glycogen you've got, the more water you can retain, the more hydrated you can be. So by combining the two from a sports nutrition perspective, it's a synergistic effect. They enhance one another.
Yeah.
I think that's why I love them, and that's why when I came up with this formula originally for myself, was it. The carbs have no flavor. They're designed to get put through the electrolytes, and then you find the ratio that works, and you finish the session feeling like a different person.
Yeah, that makes sense. But then what I might do is I might pick your brain on structuring that nutrition plan. So, because obviously you've got your carbs, you've got your electrolytes, those things. What are you doing leading up into a race, before the race, during the race, that's actually also, I guess, fueling, supporting your body, not just from a carbs and electrolytes point as well?
Yeah, it's a challenging one because we're all so different, but there's just some fundamentals that you really want to take away. If you want to structure your own nutrition strategy or reach out to an expert and get advice, you really want to start that strategy from at least a week before your race, which is what people call that carb load period. And everything that you're doing in the lead up to the race, I would have hoped that you'd been practicing it prior, because you don't want to get to race day and do something new, because that's just a recipe of disaster. But that lead up to the race for most of the endurance events is going to be a taper week. So you're going to be dialing back your training. You're going to just be focusing more on your recovery. One thing you shouldn't be doing is dialing back your food. That needs to stay up. And you need to be focusing on those, like we said earlier in the podcast, those glucose heavy carbohydrates, your rices, your oats, your breads, and get them up all during the week leading up to that race. Because the day before the race, the night before, the myth of doing a big bowl of pasta or a big pizza, that's a great way to just spend the first hour of your race on the toilet.
Yeah.
But that's the biggest mistake that I've found. So you spend that week getting all those heavy carbs in, the ones that are full of fiber that are going to sit in your stomach and flush you out. You get them in the week and you top up all your muscle glycogen. And then the day before your race, you don't need to be doing a massive glycogen top up. You're just focusing on some real easy meals. Like for me, it's just either a steak or a bit of chicken breast and some white rice and some veggies. Really light. I don't want anything more than that. And I'll go to bed and I'll watch some TV and I'll have some electrolytes and some carbs. I can absorb about 60 grams of carbs in the hour. So that's where I'll go in my bottle and I'll sit there, I'll drink that. And I know I'm going to bed. I'm fully hydrated. I've got plenty of magnesium running through me. I'm going to sleep well. And I've got a nice light meal in my stomach that's just got the right amount of carbs.
Yeah.
Move to the morning, wake up, and you naturally burn a little bit off during the sleep. So you just top up again. Don't get too carried away. A little bit of like white bread and jam or white bread and banana and some honey. It doesn't need to be any more complex than that. And that's a meal that I recommend most people should be trialing while in their training. It's very light, but it's just straight carbohydrate. It's straight in your bloodstream and it's easy to digest. You're not going to be carrying around a stomach full of, I don't know, like yogurt or something and trying to run on that. It's just nice and light.
Yeah.
And then you sort of got, a couple hours leading into the race where, again, you'll have another bottle and you'll just sip on water. You don't want to go too heavy, some glycogen, some glucose, some electrolytes, just keeping on top of that hydration. And in the race, the strategy, which is probably the most important part. You've done all the work up to that point. It's just now understanding and getting prepared and knowing, okay, is the race 4 hours? Is it 6 hours? Is it 8 hours? Is it a day? know that, because that'll obviously change. And then ask yourself, what are the conditions of this race? Is it hot? Is it overcast? Is it, am I in the water for most of it? And once you know that, you can sort of start to build your strategy. So for me, it's generally I'll run 80 to 120 grams of carbs per hour if I'm racing in an Ironman event, which is quite high. And I wouldn't recommend people start there. I'd probably recommend you start around 30 because the stomach is a muscle and you can train it.
Yeah.
But for me, I'll prepare the pouches or flasks. I'm not sure what we're calling them now, but I like both names. I will prepare about, so for an Ironman 70.3, which is my race of choice at the moment, I'll prepare about four of those, and each gel will have 60 grams of carbs and a serve of electrolytes because I need the fair, I'm quite a heavy sweater. Yeah. I'll then have two bottles. They'll have 90 grams of carbs in each, mostly glucose. So what's that, 240, 320? That's 400 grams of carbs to serve a four-hour race. That's 100 grams per hour, and I'm not consuming on the swim. So that's all happening post-swim. So that's, I'm up to about 120 per hour. And that's, you know, that's a pretty aggressive number, but that's the sort of number, you know, if you're just, if you're having your first race, for example, or you're doing a marathon, getting up to 60 grams an hour with some electrolytes, you're going to be feeling good at the end of the race. You're going to be running through the finish line, and you're going to be thinking about where the cameras are, and you're going to be thinking about getting that good photo as you cross the line. But anything sort of less than that, and you're probably going to be really searching to get that race finished.
Yeah, because you're right. It's a long time. It's a lot of calories to be burning through and consuming and all that stuff as well. And being under-fueled or under-prepared would so impact people. And I know the women, like, in my program who are just starting, like, who are obviously babies in this field of endurance training, and they've got their first event in, you know, 5 months, 6 months, whatever, and they're just starting to look into all of this. So, like, flip, it feels like a lot of carbohydrates to be consuming. They're like, is this right? But I'm like, yeah, but you've got to think about how much you're burning as well, because again, it comes back to, you're not trying to lose body fat. You're not trying to do all that stuff. You're trying to sustain performance, and how much it would impact you if you are underfueled, because I'm sure you've probably been underfueled in races before. Like, you've raced enough to have been somewhere maybe, you know, you didn't take enough.
I was lucky enough to learn that outside of a race.
Yeah.
And the typical term you may have heard is called bonking.
Yes.
And that's basically when you run out of glycogen. So like I said before, it's 500 grams of glycogen, you can store 2,000 calories. If you're working in a race or you're running a marathon, you're probably running that 800 to 1,200 calories burned per hour, which is 200 to 300 grams of carbohydrate. So within 2 hours, you're out. You're done. You're out of fuel. Your body's now going to try and run off whatever stored fat it's got. And that is a long molecule, and that has to get really slowly broken apart. And your brain doesn't want to function. Your heart rate doesn't want to go up, and you don't want to be there anymore.
Yeah.
So if you're burning 250 grams an hour and you're worried about putting 60 back in, you're not going to gain weight.
Yeah, you're still
running a massive loss.
Yeah, it's a mindset thing for sure. And I think a lot of people don't, like, they forget that, because they're like, wait, especially as women, right, they're being preconditioned to be like, lose fat, under-eat, all that stuff. And the biggest thing I have coming into my program is telling women to freaking eat more carbohydrates. Like, it is the, I make them track their macros just to make sure they're hitting their carbs, because so many women are like, Oh no, I can't. So unless they've, you know, been listening or following to triathletes or athletes or, you know, people in the industry who actually promote carbs rather than being like, no, don't have the carbs. Like, it's such a big mindset shift for people to understand that.
Yeah, you're right. And it's been probably a really unhealthy mindset for a whole generation for such a long time. And I think people like Nina, who you touched on before, really leading the way in, No, if you want to be getting better and being stronger and healthier, you need to form a really healthy relationship with carbs and start involving them in your diet, because they will make you perform so much better than if you neglect them.
Yeah. And it's interesting, because that then ties into those other macronutrients, right? Like, you've got your carbohydrates we've chatted about, but even your, you know, your protein intake is another one with women. I see it drop so quickly, which is why protein powder can be so helpful. But women are typically consuming 80 to 90 grams of protein when they're sort of just on a daily basis, when I get them to track, that's where their starting point is. And I'm going, well, you need to be like 120 to 150, like please get it up there, because again, performance recovery and all that stuff. And when they don't have the headspace of the time, that's where a protein powder comes in. And I'm like, dude, just chuck this into your diet. It's going to help on a basic level, as well as your carbs and everything else. But we know protein, healthy fats, carbs are all super important. And then also you probably want to touch on the importance of creatine as well in the diet.
Protein is such a big one. And I think you said it well, like you get people come across and they're down to 90, maybe 100 grams, which is still far too low. And in terms of just an easy kill, upping your protein intake to someone who doesn't actually want to train, there's the research is so clear cut that that'll still improve your body composition. You'll grow muscle, you'll lose fat, and your brain will function better. You'll have a better immune system. And that you don't even have to work out to get that. You just need to hit your minimum requirements. That's all you need to do. And if you are training, then you can probably go to the higher end of those numbers. But I recommend at least 2 grams per kilo of body weight, up to 2.4. And someone who's really, really going hard probably can push that even higher. So if you're a 60 kilo person, the minimum I would say would be 120 grams. You'd want to be spreading that across the day too. So we've talked about whey protein being better than plant protein because of the way the amino acids make up that protein, right? And it's all about the leucine content. It's one branch chain amino acid that is the one that's driving that. And that hasn't been an issue anymore. The right ratios of plant protein, you get that leucine. But as long as you get that 30 to 40 gram serving of protein spread out across 3 and 4 meals, your body is just going to be in that muscle protein synthesis mode for the whole day, and you'll get all the adaptations and all the benefits of protein without having to do anything but drink a chocolate milk. You know what I mean? Like,
You
got to do is, and you get all that benefit. It's unreal.
I
find that
interesting because I never realized that up until, I don't know, maybe a year or so ago when I came across the research of that. And I was like, oh, because some people are like, oh, yeah, I'm getting, say it's 100 grams of protein, which I know is still under, but they're getting like 50 grams of that at dinner in a massive steak, and they're eating like 5 to 10 grams in their other meals across the day. And I'm like, wait a second. A, that's not great for your blood sugar levels, but B, is that stimulating that muscle protein synthesis? And I'm like, no, but it's not, right? Like, unless someone's spreading it out, like you just said there, as long as you're getting sort of that 30 grams in your meals, it makes such a big difference than one massive whack at dinner as opposed to and nothing across the rest of the day.
Yeah, it's you're definitely right. And look, you are better off doing a massive meal at night than nothing at all. Of course. But if you can space that, like everyone's a bit different. Maybe you do intermittent fasting and then you want to run between 12 and 8 o'clock, you spread 4 small meals. But at least if you can space a 30 up to 50 grams of protein to 2 to 4 hours, you're just going to be in that perfect zone the entire day and just reap the benefits that you would, that really take very little effort to get. And from a sports performance perspective, it is the easiest kill you can get, especially on like a recovery day.
Yeah, for sure. And then what about creatine? Because that's obviously another product that these guys have popped out on the market as well. And we know like there is so much research around creatine, but can you chat to us briefly about that?
So creatine's a funny one. Like it's like I said before, there's only about 4 things that are actually proven to do anything. And creatine is just right at the top of that list. Like it doesn't get any better than that. So I can't not stock it because I go through a lot of it myself. And I think the mindset towards creatine has been so poor for so long. It's been, I don't want to hold water. I don't want to retain water. And I never actually really noticed your skin holding water. Like it's the creatine stored in your muscles. Mm-hmm. It powers your ATP system and it helps water retention in your muscles. It actually makes you look better if you have a good quality supplement. It actually makes your muscles look fuller. Not in a bulky way, but which makes your skin tighter, which actually makes it look better. So I wouldn't worry about looking bloated from creatine. But what I think the common mistake people make is that because it does hold so much water, and as a gut health specialist, if you put something into your stomach that holds a lot of water, it's going to dry out your stomach. So the way to counteract that is drink water with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then it's not pulling water out from its surroundings. So you've got to have creatine with like half a liter of water, and then it's perfect. You don't get any stomach soreness. All the water gets distributed to the right places, and you just get all the benefits. It's now proven it helps your brain function. It helps that repeat effort when you do a strength training. You grow more muscle. You recover quicker. I don't think you sleep better. And it's cheap. It's so cheap. Like the value you get out of it for another easy kill, like get your protein intake right and just add a bit of creatine in there. It is the cheapest, easiest kill you can do to get it to be a better athlete.
And from what I've picked up with creatine, it's not as important when you take it. It's more about consistency. Is that correct? As in pre or post, intra, whatever workout, it's more that consistency every day because you can load up to a certain point and then you just maintain it, I think.
Yeah, you're right. It is a consistency thing. And you know, if you're doing, say, one protein shake a day to get your protein up, it's not a hard thing just to put a little scoop of that on the top. And even if you just do, say, 5 grams of creatine a day, which is, and you just run that, by the time, within 8 weeks, that creatine is fully loaded in your system and you're going to be benefiting from it. But you can fast track that. You can go to 3 to 5 serves a day for a week or two, and that'll be fully loaded in your system, in your body, and you're benefiting from that a lot quicker. But some people, yeah, they may not want to drink that much water to make that comfortably digest. So you might be better off just doing 2 serves a day for a couple of weeks and then just be consistent. Within 8 weeks, you'll start to feel, you might notice your body weight goes up a little bit, but that's perfectly healthy, and you should really dive into that. You should appreciate that. I wouldn't try and shy away from that.
Yeah. Honestly, I reckon, I'm trying to think of when I got my creatine off you, because I was super inconsistent with creatine prior to grabbing it through you and starting to do the protein stuff regularly. And in the last, I want to say 4 to 6 weeks, which I reckon I've been on it maybe 6 weeks. I'm just at a guess how long I've known you, 6 weeks maybe. Maybe 2 months. I feel like 2 months might be pushing it because we're only May. That was March, April. Yeah, it would have been.
I'll go sorry quick. It was probably 3 years ago.
What am I now? Mid-30s? Pushing 40? Don't. But I think about it, and my performance in the last 6 to 8 weeks has just gone, like, increased so much. Back into consistent training, obviously, from being overseas for 2 months. But I'm the strongest now I've ever been, and I'm training regularly, obviously, but I always have. But I reckon it's made such a difference to my performance, and I would never ever say that about a supplement because I'm not that kind of person. I'm like, it's down to consistency, showing up, doing the thing, like, you know, like I'm so like driven. Yes, you have to do it. But if I think about the changes that I've made to my diet over the last 6 to 8 weeks, and it would be the electrolytes, it would be the carbs in my rides, it would be the creatine, and it would be the protein, be those things. And I think about how much I'm lifting now, and I'm hands down the strongest I've ever been. And my sprinting and stuff, that my power output is so much higher as well. Even my rides, until I stopped the last couple of weeks, but I was like, oh man, wow. Like, and I would never put that down to supplements before because I'm like, nah, like whatever, supplements don't do that. It's how hard you're working. But I've realized how hard I'm working is a reflection of this other stuff I'm putting into my body, which is just, yeah, it's been awesome.
Well, I wouldn't sell yourself short. It is how hard you're working, but you need to be fueling that to sustain that work ethic. And you could work that hard, but if you're not doing the right things around your body nutritionally, within a day or two, you're not going to want to do that. You know, you're not going to have the motivation because you're going to be fatigued. Your body's going to be searching for calories. You're not going to have the energy. But because you're taking the time to do those small fundamentals correctly, you're motivated and you're energized. And every time you go to the gym, you have a good session.
Yeah.
And that's all you want. You want to go in and be happy and want to go back.
Yeah, and not too exhausted and yeah, 100%. Well, I love today's podcast episode. Thank you. You're incredible. Your wealth of knowledge, and you're just pushing really important things, I feel like, in the health and wellness space at the moment. I love your products. I'm happy to say that, and I don't push crap on people. So if I'm saying it, I mean it. And I just think, yeah, the research around it that you're doing, the time, the energy, the effort, all that stuff is so appreciated, and hopefully it does get pushed into the bigger athlete fields at some stage. But thank you for that. And where can people find Organic Performance? Where's the best place to find these guys?
Well, at the moment, we're mostly online. If you're Melbourne based, we are in some gyms that you can find us, but mostly online. We're pretty active on social media, and we're always happy to chat to anyone who's got questions or wants guidance. And that doesn't mean you need a purchase from us either. You're more than welcome just to reach out. We love a chat. So if you're struggling to work out, you've got your first race coming up and you're terrified, we've all been there. So feel free to reach out and ask for some tips, and we'll help you where we can. We've got some content there that, you know, that will guide you through it as well. Otherwise, Shez will help you out too. She's an expert.
I will second that, guys. So Instagram is just Organic Performance, and then the underscore at the end, I think. So that's pretty easy to find. TikTok, Organic Performance, Facebook, Organic Performance, website. I'm pretty sure it's www.organicperformance. I don't think there's anything crazy thrown in there.
Yeah, .com.au. Yep.
Pretty easy for you guys to find. Nick is super chatty. That is the reason that we actually became friends, is because he was so helpful. Whereas it's really hard to find a company who A, cares about the product so much, and B, are happy to help you. So if you do reach out to them, if you have questions about the products or how to incorporate it into training, there is stuff on their website that Nick can direct you to, but also he is really helpful. Or holler at me and I will pester him and get the answers for you. Either, it won't matter. It's going to be the same information.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Or go follow Nina. I'll tag her in this stuff and tell her about this episode because she'll love it. Same thing again. You can see how much she uses their products as well and just how versatile their products are. So I'm going to link all that stuff in the show notes for you guys so you can access that, have a squiz. Hopefully you got some good tips and tricks out of today. I definitely learned heaps. But again, if you have questions around training, around any of that stuff, Nick's been there, done that, is in there, is training, doing all the things. So he is a good person to ask. So, thank you for jumping on today. We appreciate you and your wealth of knowledge.
No, thank you for having me. You're a legend. And like I said, I've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. So hit me up.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Empowered Hormone Podcast. If you know a female who needs some empowerment, please forward, repost, tag or share, and let's get women talking.